Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 177, Science Faction, the Ordovician period.
Sounds like a Tolkien book.
Yes, it was Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, Ordovician period.
So it was a documentary, gotcha. like the Saruman period.
Exactly. Well, the Ordovician period, remember we covered the Cambrian last time. Cambrian's obviously much more well-known. You've heard of the Cambrian extinction and the Cambrian explosion. The Ordovician is the second of the six periods of the Paleozoic era. The Ordovician spans 41.2 million years, which, again, as we go further in time, these periods tend to get shorter and shorter because more interesting stuff is happening and we have more natural boundaries to work with. It goes from the end of the Cambrian period, about 485 million years ago, to the start of the Silurian period, 443 million years ago, and this is where stuff starts to happen. As we start getting into these periods and talk about the diversity of biological life, you're going to literally see the world as we know it form. You're going to see these little bits, these little things that kind of make up the mosaic of the world as we currently know it. We see that life continued to kind of explode out, as we saw in the earlier Cambrian period, and the end of it was marked by a large extinction event called the Ordovician-Silurian extinction event. We had a bunch of invertebrates dominate this period, mostly mollusks and arthropods, and this was almost all in the ocean. Most life at this point was still in the ocean. You had a little bit of stuff going on land, but it was very, very rare. Think about this, by the way. We're still talking 500 million years ago and less. So this is not that long ago in terms of the age of the Earth, and we still don't really have a lot of stuff on land. That tells you how new a lot of the biology that we think is so old really is. We've had life for billions of years, and we still haven't really colonized land that much.
I've heard that because these periods were so unpredictable, and they're getting closer together as time goes on, that's the reason the Earth can't wear white pants anymore.
That's true, and it's after Labor Day. That Ordovician-Silurian extinction event may have been caused by an ice age that occurred because we actually started to have a bunch of plants dominate the land. And what happens when plants come up? They start creating oxygen. Oxygen helps cool off the Earth, and because of that, you might have a huge global cooling event that would kill a lot of the species that were around at the time. We also have the first like real vertebrates, fish, are starting to swim throughout the oceans. They're still being dominated by invertebrates, but we see the evolution of something very important in the vertebrate line, something that we use to distinguish different animals in biology and their different evolutionary paths, and that's the evolution of the jaw in those vertebrate fish.
So right now the squid owns the sea.
That's exactly correct.
All right, but the shark, or even a sharknado, years off.
Millennia away from a Sharknado, but somehow only a few decades away from Ian Ziering. So it's weird coincidence that way.
He's a Highlander. I've always thought so. I'll put him on the Highlander list.
In fact, we did have something equivalent to the Cambrian explosion in the Ordovician II, the Ordovician radiation, which saw an increase resulting in 12% of all known marine fauna basically exploding out. And so we see huge extinctions, huge explosions of animals. We see vertebrates come in, jawed fish. We start seeing the world as we know it form, especially when it starts coming to land plants. We're seeing a change from a Cambrian-type world with very little plants on land, with no jawed fish, with very, very few vertebrates, to kind of larger animals, mollusks, arthropods coming in the ocean, some vertebrates, some jawed vertebrates, all of a sudden land plants. We're starting to see the world as we currently know it form, and that's going to set the stage for some really interesting stuff that comes in the next few periods.
If there were no such thing as jawed fish, I imagine the movie Jaws would just be called gums.
Yeah.
Baleen.
Sucker tube. And this is also where we see a lot of the trilobite life that was prominent in the Cambrian start to die off as well as they get replaced by other more shelled creatures. Very, very interesting time in Earth's history. And I always love this because if you just think of it now, we see the Earth as this snapshot. Each of these periods, as we dissect it, is going to show us little elements of that snapshot. It's like watching like one of those Bob Rossi paintings. We're seeing not just the whole painting, but we're seeing how that happy little tree got drawn in there. But then we're seeing when that lake got put in, and we're realizing that it's really a story. What we're seeing now is the end result, the end story of all this stuff that happened leading up to it.
And if the Earth was an Etch-a-Sketch, correct me if I'm wrong, right. at 6,000 years ago, we shook the
we
whole
shook
thing
We shook it,
up
restarted with the flood. Right, exactly, scientifically
gotcha.
Speaking.
Gotcha. We'll bring Ken Ham on. He'll explain it better later.
Speaking of scientists like Ken Ham, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. And with me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great. I hope we talk about creationism later. Otherwise, I wasted a perfectly good introduction to use my Ken Ham voice.
And our scientist for the evening with his chemical engineering background, Connor. Connor, how you doing?
Good, good. Good to be back.
And good to have you here at the Madhouse Comedy Club along the skyline of beautiful downtown San Diego. Come on out for Madhouse's Saturday night lineup. And when you're not doing that, check out our website at www.thesciencefaction.com for all the articles we cover here, as well as some we don't get to. But for now, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, guys, this first article is a really interesting one. I normally like to go with like super interesting scientific discoveries, something like that. This is not that. And so we're deviating a little bit from that because it is so interesting.
By deviating from our norm, you meaning we're going to not talk about an archaeology article?
No, it's actually the second
minutes?
Article. Okay. So just so you know. Hold on to your archaeology pants, Damien. I know you're upset by that. This is more of a thought that a researcher had, a proposal that he has sent in as a paper to a journal. It's not even actually published yet. This is not a peer-reviewed experiment. This is nothing like this. This is really just, hey, here's an idea. And what it addresses is something we've talked about over and over again on Science Faction, the Fermi paradox. The Fermi paradox is...
when they have to cut the baby out of a mother's
no,
stomach.
That is not it. And it's not maize. Don't say that either. The Fermi paradox is basically, it was something thought of by Enrico Fermi when they were sitting around saying, hey, look, if we look at the statistical likelihood of life and it's just this biological process and look at all these planets and there should be life everywhere, the galaxy should be filled and the universe should be filled even more.
Well, he said that the more like these.
That's true. Well, no, what he said was, where is everybody? How come we're not hearing them? Why are they so quiet? And everybody kind of looked at each other and was like, yeah, fuck, why? You're right. Why don't we hear them? We should get radio signals from everywhere. We should be hearing it nonstop. All these different civilizations popping up. Now, that doesn't mean they should be visiting us, because that same amount of mathematics says that they should be very far away and it would be very hard for them to ever get to us, almost impossible. But we should be hearing their radio signals. Why aren't we hearing the space around us alive with different radio signals? Now, there's a lot of different thoughts to the Fermi paradox. Maybe there's too much interference based on the size of the galaxy and the size of the universe, and those radio signals can't reach us. Maybe civilizations get to a certain point and they destroy themselves with nuclear weapons, and then they're not around to send those signals off. Maybe the timescales are so big that we're just not overlapping in the right sense. We've only been able to listen for 100 or so years, and we're not hearing all the millions of civilizations that are out there that have been broadcasting over billions of years.
If the aliens that evolved had mind powers or like the ability to communicate and telekinesis, wouldn't they not need radios?
Well, they would then get to the point where they wanted to find other aliens and they would start sending out radio signals looking for them.
They built a wall. They're very isolationist. They had a very regressive time. And
they built a wall around their planet?
It's a Dyson sphere.
They built a Dyson sphere around the planet? Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually much more advanced and admirable than Trump's wall.
And there's even the idea that, hey, maybe we're the first, you know, and statistically that seems very unlikely. Of all the billions of planets, we would be the first, but also statistically somebody does have to be the first. So that could be us. So there's all these different ideas on the solution to the Fermi paradox. This recent researcher, Sandberg, he wrote a letter basically stipulating an idea that I have not heard before. And I don't think has been really postulated publicly. And that's very interesting, which is maybe these aliens are so intelligent, they have decided to digitize their consciousness, which a lot of people think is the basically inevitable result of life, that eventually you go, hey, biology is not the best way to live. You're going to want to digitize stuff because then you can essentially be immortal and you could get rid of all the problems that come with biology. So you digitize your consciousness. You live in some kind of computer network. You can network with other things. And if you did that, you would also realize that anybody with a computer background knows heat is a computer's worst enemy. The warmer a circuit gets, the harder it is for that circuit to work, the more energy it takes. So the less efficient it can be, the less computations you can be. That's why supercomputers are cooled. So if you wanted...
They're the only computers that are allowed to smoke Marlboro cigarettes.
That's right.
In there.
They have leather jackets with flipped up collars, and they always ride motorcycles without helmets.
When they hit a jukebox, it just fucking works.
The idea is, hey, what if these creatures digitize themselves and then realize, fuck, it is too warm. That slows down our processing ability. We only have so much finite amount of energy. We need to utilize that in the best possible way. The best way is for it to be the coldest. Right now, the radiation from the Big Bang puts us on average about 3 degrees Kelvin above absolute zero. And that's not very hot. That's actually very cool, cold. That would kill us very, very, very quickly. But in the grand scheme of things, computational-wise, if you waited for the universe to cool down a little bit, which it's doing due to entropy, if you waited millions and millions of years for everything to cool down, maybe billions of years, then you can use that same amount of energy that you have and do 10 to the 30th more calculations, faster computational speed. And therefore, essentially, if life is computation to you, if life is a computer program, you can live longer, do more things, compute much more. So maybe these aliens got so advanced that they digitized themselves and put themselves in a state of hibernation to then wait for the universe to cool down enough so that it is more efficient for them to exist.
All I heard is that I can now computer hack aliens.
No, that is not what you heard. You're not Russian. You can't do that.
You're right. I'm Chinese.
So what are they waiting for?
The cooling of the universe due to entropy. So because eventually that will go from 3 degrees above absolute zero down to essentially almost none as it approaches the asymptote. And then when that happens, their ability to compute with the same amount of power and energy will be 10 to the 30th higher.
Right. But if they're so advanced, you know, what are they trying to find? You know, what goal do they have? Are they waiting to
It's a good question.
You know, destroy everyone?
Or? Maybe they're just waiting to live. They want to live just like we live, and they see the ability. It'd be like if we looked around and we said, look, we have this limited amount of food supply. There's 10 people in a room. There's a limited amount of food supply. We can all live right now. But hey, if we all conserve this, if we go to sleep, we don't use a lot of energy and stuff, this food is going to last us much longer. What if we do it that way and then we don't go burn through our food or our oxygen or whatever it is, our life-sustaining ability? In this case, when you're a digital being, your life-sustaining ability is just pure energy. So if you can utilize that energy better to live, to experience culture, life, research, knowledge, whatever it is that you're doing as a digital entity, you can do it more, better, faster when it's colder.
Doesn't this bring up some problems? First off, who's going to maintain the hardware that you are download the disk drive that you are downloaded on?
Solid state hard drives, Damien, they'll last forever. Yeah,
but you still got to get the Geek Squad in to transfer it to another to dust it off.
Wouldn't it be great? Yeah, they keep one guy alive. There's just one dude who's going through what looks like a server farm on some alien planet dusting shit.
I wouldn't trust him. You'd have to be like the most good-natured alien.
Right.
Like the alien that we could trust to watch over us for eternity. And we'll never get to experience any of the fruits of immortality.
That's true, yeah. Well, I mean, and that idea, that immortality idea is kind of interesting. Again, obviously it's not immortality. Eventually the universe, you know, dies out, a cold heat death or however else. And eventually those computer circuits, like you mentioned, die out no matter how well they're made. So it's not immortality in the sense that they'll live forever, but it's immortality in the sense that they would live throughout the conceivable future.
Is it possible, and I mean conceivably possible, that was their game plan to digitize themselves,
right,
and wait for the end of the universe.
Yeah.
But as soon as they fired it up, they fired up their plan, they realized, oh shit, we used Windows. Everybody's fucking dead.
They're screwed now.
We're going to auto update a year into this hibernation.
Bad operating systems, shitty hardware.
Could have gone with Apple, but they weren't that evolved.
You imagine that one guy in the server farm, they all digitize themselves and he just like downloads them as Pokemon and now he's their slave master. So he rules this super advanced alien civilization with an iron fist.
What could I do? I have all the information in the universe at my hand or billions of hours of pornography.
Yeah, right.
How am I going to spend my time everybody's going to wake up impregnated and whitewashed.
So we have to ask ourselves a few questions. Is this a feasible idea? I don't know, because you'd have to say that all the civilizations that got super advanced did this, not just one, right? So if we're seeing no radio signals, you'd have to say everybody's doing this. This is the end result of all civilization. I don't know that we could really make that claim. Number two, and the other issue that I would have with this is, okay, so let's say they got to the super advanced point. They digitize themselves. They're hibernating, waiting for the universe to cool down. Then they're going to pop back on. Fine, fair enough. I'll go with all that. They still have to go through the period of time that we're in right now, where you're transmitting radio waves, you're broadcasting, you're doing all this stuff before you reach the super advanced, we've digitized our consciousness portion of life. And in that sense, we should still have these blips of radio signals, these blips of communication, these blips of natural life going on around us.
What if aliens use comets to talk? Comets and asteroids, and we're just unable to decipher this language. We think they're just, you think these are just balls of elements.
So what you're saying is Marshall Applewhite, the cult leader who ended up killing all those people in Heaven's Gate, he was right.
He was the only one who could crack the code. He was he broke the Enigma code. He was the Alan Turing of spiritually of this planet.
And they love Nikes.
Another thing to think about is, you know, we obviously don't know how these aliens are generating their power.
Right.
But certain power generation methods, they're more efficient the more heat you have.
True.
So you have a greater driving force if you have something really hot going to something really cold.
Mm-hmm.
As the universe inevitably gets colder, sure, maybe their computers will run faster, but now does it get harder for them to generate electricity?
And if you have some kind of electricity storage medium, what's your loss of power over time? You know, it's like charge up your lithium battery in your computer and you can charge it to full, but then 2 years later, open it up and see how that does for you.
I heard cold fusion once in a movie. What about that?
Well, first of all, no. They wouldn't need it. They have stars with hot fusion. They can use that much easier with the aforementioned Dyson sphere, where you essentially surround a star completely in what is essentially solar panels and collect every photon that comes out of that star and use every bit of energy that comes out of it. But again, you would have that energy storage issue. Now, maybe we could play devil's advocate here and say they have a no energy loss energy storage system that we haven't discovered yet. That in and of itself would not defy the laws of thermodynamics. You couldn't get more energy out of it than you put in, but theoretically you could have a perfect energy storage medium. So let's say maybe, playing devil's advocate, they have that. I would still have questions about whether or not the feasibility of this works in terms of A, the steps it takes to get there. B, do you really want to take that gamble? What happens if a meteorite strikes your computer server in the billions of years interim while you're waiting? You know, like, you then have to have...
We have a Bruce Willis on standby this entire time.
Michael Clark Duncan died! We're screwed! Do you really want to take that gamble? You know, how much, and you can say, oh, well, they have this great asteroid defense system. Okay, well, how much energy does that take? Is the difference in energy for keeping you in that stasis environment and protecting that information that becomes your life and living existence, is the energy you put into that more than the energy you would save by waiting for the universe to go? And the risk, you know, they know if they digitize themselves and turn themselves on immediately, they know for sure right then at least that they are able to live and exist however they exist for however long they can. If they do it this long-term fashion, they have no idea what's going to happen. Their sun could expand into a red giant and wipe out the planet. So forget asteroids. Their entire planet could be gone. You know, and so it seems to me like a really neat, interesting idea. The reason I like it is because I always love the Fermi paradox. I've been very interested in it. Those of you who are interested in it should go and look at This American Life this week. They actually have a very interesting story on a physicist who has like an emotional breakdown almost over the Fermi paradox. It is interesting. I've always thought it was a really interesting conundrum. And so I'm always very interested in possible solutions. So this to me is really, really neat. Probably not the answer to the Fermi paradox.
Is it possible that it's not the answer because Grand Democratic Lord Xenu pulled us out of the Dyson Sphere Accords? He was elected to represent Pittsburgh, not Pluto.
That's right. Well, he did load everybody and all the Thetans into DC-10s and send them back this way. So we do have that problem already. You know, and then this also brings up a question which I like, which is this the inevitable future of mankind? Do we eventually digitize ourselves? There's been a lot of theorists. This guy, Sandberg, is not the first to say human life will eventually go to a digitized format. And then there are people like Elon Musk, obviously, who say, hey, maybe we're already there. We're already in that simulation. We just view ourselves as being biological organisms. Not a big follower of that. I think it's a solipsistic question, which just becomes philosophical masturbation at some point. But the question becomes, would we digitize ourselves if we had the ability? You essentially would make yourself immortal. But, and I've always argued this before, this is my transporter argument. When people say, hey, I can digitize my brain, then I'm immortal. I get to live forever. And I always say, no, you don't. Your information does. It's the transporter argument from Star Trek. People say, wouldn't transporters be cool? Look at Star Trek. They dematerialize you and rematerialize you elsewhere. Isn't that neat? And I said, no, they're murdering you. They're killing you. They're killing your body and creating a copy of your body someplace else. And even if it's an exact copy, that is not you. There is not a continuation of consciousness. They have destroyed your body and made a really good copy elsewhere. And I think that would be the same thing with it. That, by definition, would be the same issue digitizing your consciousness. That consciousness might wake up thinking it's you. It would. And if you replicated yourself exactly, and you would think that you exist inside this computer, but it is not you, you would still die.
So, okay, I think I got from this. I can upload myself to Napster.
Yes.
And I can download free copies of myself.
Probably.
Wouldn't that piss off Metallica?
I think so, yeah. Lars Ulrich is going to come and be really pissed off about it.
I'd like to see them have a Star Trek episode where it just creates the copy and doesn't murder the original.
They did. Actually, that happened to Riker. They created another Riker once.
Evil Riker?
Yeah. I think he didn't have a goatee or something. I'm not sure. My favorite
was... It's not exact copy.
At one of the Next Generations, there was their engineer, Reg, who was like super scared about going through the transporter, and everybody was like, come on, Reg, you're being a little bitch. Now he's screaming at the TV, he's right! He's fucking right!
To be fair, though, Reg as a character is a little bitch.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's move right on to article number two. The ancient Egyptians were less African than previously thought. This is super interesting. This is one of the most interesting archaeological genetic articles that came out in the last year, and I'll tell you why. There has been an ongoing controversy for the past 200 years at least as to the ethnicity of the ancient Egyptians.
Oh, I thought the controversy was, can Egyptians use the N-word without consequence?
Yeah, but... it's kind of similar, actually, in a way. So there's been a lot of people who state that ancient Egyptians were essentially black Africans. They use the term Nubians a lot. I actually kind of fell into that camp a little bit. I thought, well, maybe that's true, because we know that there's right now the population of Egypt is somewhat Arab-centric. There are people more from the Middle East as opposed to sub-Saharan Africa, what we would consider black people. But at the same time, that there's been expansions out of the Middle East so much over the last 10,000 years that I have always kind of figured that ancient Egypt was probably a good mix, but probably more black African than it is currently, and they got superseded by people from the Middle East coming in. I am officially announcing right now, I was wrong, and so were a lot of other people when they had that idea.
To be fair, though, you based that assumption on like a lot of very racist things, like, oh, Egyptians are super flashy, there's That's gold right. everywhere.
I saw the rims on the chariots. Right, yeah, no. Well, that, and like, you know, people would point to they're like, oh man, if only we had the nose on the Sphinx. If it hadn't been blown off, that would give us a key to it. It's like, no, not so much, because there's a lot of, you know, there's phenotypic differences that kind of span different human beings.
When they found King Tut's grill, like, you looked That's at right. that as pretty proof.
And what these guys did is they finally went out and they started doing genetic testing of mummies from about 1400 BC to about 400 CE. This should be noted that doesn't even come close to the Old Kingdom, which is about 3000 BC. So you could still make an argument for there, but a couple of things that we'll get into, including a huge genetic homogeneity over that time period, meaning basically stayed very, very similar, that stasis over that time period, which should be pretty exceptional considering that is when Egypt gets conquered by Alexander the Great and the Ptolemaic dynasties come around. So this is a period of time where you would expect a lot of genetic shift, and there isn't, which seems to suggest a very stable genetic population for a long period of time. You might say, why did this take so long? Egyptian mummies, this is a huge controversy. Why weren't they doing this a long time ago? Egypt is two things, hot and humid, and both of those lead to very poor preservation of DNA and biological materials. So for the longest time, it was very difficult to get DNA, especially nuclear DNA, out of these mummies. But with modern advanced techniques and finding mummies that were sealed in specific tombs and areas that were away from degradation and anaerobic conditions, we have gotten better and better at being able to pull that out. They tested over 90 individuals and got full genomes from three of those. These range in that time period from about 1400 BC to 300 CE, somewhere around there.
If curses didn't exist, would we have been able to get this from a tomb a long time ago?
Yeah, if Tom Cruise didn't bravely go in there and fight numerous mystical beings, we would have no idea what was going on here.
So you're going to watch the movie, I take it.
Yeah, that's right. What they found was the people in this area, at least the mummies that they tested, essentially had a stable genetic lineage over this time, and that was more associated with people from the Levant, so basically people from the Middle East, people in that Eastern Mediterranean area, than it was from people from sub-Saharan Africa. In fact, the modern-day Egyptian population, which is very Arab and very Arabic-seeming, has much more sub-Saharan African DNA than the ancient Egyptians. So not only were they not sub-Saharan African, not black African, the Egyptians, they're actually less black African back then than they are now. That's amazing. I
mean, but geographically, though, coming from sub-Saharan Africa, mm-hmm. you have to cross the Sahara. Wouldn't right. that be a lot harder than just dropping down
It is, the except Middle East? The Sahara has not always been the size that it is today. In fact, it's gone through periods where it was almost non-existent to having little oases that they could go through. You also have Nubian cultures in places like Ethiopia that kind of come along the Nile River. We know that the southern edges of that Nile, there were Nubian cultures that had contact and trade with the Egyptians. So while Egypt itself seems to have been occupied by people genetically from the Levant, it wasn't too far away that we see the sub-Saharan influence of genetically black Africans in nearby.
Okay.
Super, super interesting. This is huge. And I know a lot of people are saying, oh, this is one of many genetic studies. This is the first one we've actually done that looked at these people directly, and it is completely upending a lot of the things that we thought. And it's pretty definitive because we're not talking about an N size of one. We're talking, they actually looked at 151 different mummies. They got DNA out of 90. They got a full genome out, I think, out of three, but you don't need that full genome to do all this work. So you have a big sample population. Now, there are still a few caveats. Number one, your average Egyptian was not mummified. We're still talking about the upper castes of society. That does not speak to the whole of Egypt itself, but it does speak over a very long period of time of the continuation of a specific genetic lineage, at least in the upper crust of society.
So Egypt was the Brazil of its time. If you looked at all the popular, sexy Egyptian kids TV shows, you had no idea this is the second largest population of black people outside of Africa. Well, outside of sub-Saharan Africa.
They didn't have a lot of black people out of that's the whole thing. They had people from the Middle East.
Well, we didn't. I want to see
the
some
upper crust.
Yes.
I want to see Yeah, we got to check the Egyptian favelas if we
that's
really
true.
Want.
Yeah, I guess that good point. Yeah. Let's go examine outside of the ritzy pyramid areas.
But so, would you choose Jewish slaves, really? Like, of all the slaves available.
That turns out to be a long-standing myth. There were no Jewish slaves building the pyramids. We know that for a fact.
They were Jewish accountants during the number crunching.
Well, what's interesting, if people ask me, because I bring that up a lot and people get offended sometimes, but the reason is we actually can tell Jewish cultures very easily in the archaeological record. Any guesses as to how?
Circumcision.
No, that does not preserve as well as you might think. Connor?
No guesses.
No.
Yarmulke scars on the head, just lifelong of wearing...
No pork bones. So within Jewish cultures, even going back 2,500 years, we see a complete absence of pig bones within their midden piles. We have the workers' quarters of Egyptian workers and the Egyptian groups. They were not slaves, by the way. They were highly trained crews of masons. They worked in crews of 20 to 40. They would each be responsible for bringing a block from quarry all the way to the actual pyramid itself. You couldn't do that with slave labor. It took a lot of specialized, skilled labor. We have the quarters of those workers. We have not only their pits, which show things like pork, but it shows the languages, the cultures, the gods they worship. All that gets preserved in that record. We know they weren't slaves and they weren't Jewish.
We found one of the very first Jewish comedians, Tite Five, in a cave. He was a lot of heavy sarcasm, the birth of sarcasm. And
it was a Tite Five, but he really stretched it out to a loose 15 set. Yeah. They also seem to be related to Neolithic populations from the Anatolian Peninsula and Europe, which should be expected. The Anatolian Peninsula, otherwise known as Turkey, that is where essentially agriculture got its start. Those people occupied fucking everywhere. Yeah, those people. And I can say that because as a European, I am one of them, because all of the European hunter-gatherer groups about 7,000 to 8,000 years ago essentially got subsumed by those people who came in and infused their genetic material. So that's always a fun thing I like to give to people who are like white supremacists, to be like, you know, you're kind of mostly Middle Eastern, right?
You claim your European hunter-gatherer heritage only when it's convenient for you in an argument.
And by the way, they then came in a couple thousand years later. They came back in and did an even larger genetic infusion with pastoral animals, with things like goats and stuff. So basically, Europe has been continuously conquered and occupied by people from the Middle East for the last 10,000 years. And it turns out that Egypt was the same, and that's kind of to be expected. So in that sense, it does make sense, though it was still surprising for me to see. It's one of those things. I'm happy to be proved wrong anytime like this, because it means that the information I have is now more accurate. And that's a really interesting thing. It kind of switches your worldview a little bit as to what you knew and what you didn't know before.
I learned Bobby is Turkish today.
That's true. We are all a little bit Turkish.
Take it fucking back.
All right, guys, let's move right on to everybody's favorite game. I call BS.
I call.
Ring, ring.
I call BS.
Interesting that we're talking about Turkey and the Erdogan of this podcast.
How
about
dare
to play
you?
His game.
My security forces will beat you savagely in the streets of DC.
I am peacefully protesting.
All right, guys. I call BS is the game where I read four science news articles. My panelists compete to see which ones are real and which ones are BS, standing for bad science. Are you guys ready to play?
Yes.
Yeah. Let's. Yeah, I'm ready to play just like those Jewish slaves are ready to build a pyramid. Just.
All right. Article number one. Scientists have recently discovered the new tallest tree in the world in Papua New Guinea. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science. It would have been the tallest tree in the world if it didn't contract kuru.
Kuru, of course, the brain-eating prion disease from New Guinea. Very nice reference, Damien.
Yeah, I like to reference a disease three people have heard of. That makes my joke super solid.
And Connor.
I'm going to call bad science. Born and raised in California, we've got some pretty tall trees here, and you know, I'll be damned if there's taller trees somewhere else.
Oh, you damn New Guineans. I'm
gonna punch a New Guinea Highlander next first time I see him.
All right, article number two. A new study shows that drinking tea can change a woman's genes. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is science, but it's misleading. That tea is just an initial for thalidomide, and it does change DNA, but not hers. It is
the baby that gives them flippers. Flipper baby. Hey, right, fair enough. Good argument. And Connor.
I'm going to go bad science unless that's CRISPR tea she's drinking.
And article number three, scientists have physically rewired the brain of one species to produce the behaviors of another. Damien's a science. We're bad science.
This is science. I imagine you could clockwork orange me until, like, I thought I was my dog.
Well, just to be clear, that would be psychologically changing it, not physically changing it. Do you want to keep your science guess?
Yes.
Okay. And
wish
Connor.
I had a funnier way to segue out of that.
So physically rewired, what does that mean? Is that unplugging neurons and putting them somewhere
pretty
else?
Pretty much. We'll not comment on putting them somewhere else.
I'll go science. I could believe that.
If I were hypnotized and thought, for example, if I were hypnotized and you thought I was a monkey and I developed the upper arm strength just through repetitive, is that physically changing me?
No, it does not.
Okay.
And that has happened. All right, article number four. Scientists have turned off allergic reactions in animals using gene editing techniques. Damien, is this science or bad science?
This is bad science, and I just am saying this just because I have terrible allergies, and if there's a fucking cure, and they're wasting it on animals.
You're going to be pissed.
Yeah. At least, are they wasting it on a hypoallergenic animal? Like, if they're wasting it on a cat that's allergic to itself, maybe I can understand.
All right, Ed Connor.
I'll go science. I mean, if they can find a way to suppress... some genetic activity that, or, you know, alter a genetic promoter that, doesn't cause this autoimmune reaction to happen. I think that could be used or be done using genetic tools.
Perfect. All right. Let's go back and see how you guys did. Follow along at home and see how you did. Article number one. Scientists have recently discovered the new tallest tree in the world in Papua New Guinea. Both of you guys thought this was bad science, and this one is... bad science. You are right. We still have the biggest ones here in California. However, they did discover the tallest one growing at high altitudes. Super, super interesting. First of all, the New Guinea Highlands are a really neat place. The people who live there are basically a remnant of the first people to leave Africa. Same thing with Australian Aborigines. There's a lot of really interesting things about those people. One, we think that they seem to have discovered agriculture independently of the rest of the world, as has only happened maybe three times in different places on Earth. Number two, we did not know that there was a population of over a million of these Neolithic farmers living up in the highlands of New Guinea. Over a million people living this super primitive lifeway that they had lived for 70,000 years. And we had no idea they existed until World War II, when we started flying planes over it, looking down and going, holy fuck, there's entire civilizations down there. Super interesting group. One of the interesting things about that is we actually have videos of some first contacts of those tribes. And that's a crazy thing, because in anthropology, most tribal first contacts happened in the 1800s, 1700s, those kind of times. We can actually see film reels of human beings contacting these people for the first time in 70,000 years.
Is this before or after the cargo cults were introduced?
Similar idea, yeah, of cargo cults, though those were coastal people. Those were not as much of the Highlanders.
I just always thought Highlander meant immortal. Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I have no idea.
But they, so in looking here, we do discover new things like this all the time. And in this case, they discovered the highest tree growing up at tall altitudes. They found 15 tree families with individuals growing from 30 to 40 meters tall at extreme altitudes, which brings assumptions about how plants work, about how tall trees can grow at certain places into question. Very, very cool stuff. The tallest tree includes a 41 meter high Starken bogey. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. One of the southern beaches whose ancestors dominated Gondwana land forests for millions of years. And that was back when Australia was connected to all those things. Basically, these are ancient trees that are really, really big and seem to defy what we knew about botany in terms of how big and large and tall trees and plants could grow at that altitude. Super, super cool discovery. Article number two. A new study shows that drinking tea can change a woman's genes. Damien thinks this is true. Connor thinks this is false. And this one is science does so through epigenetics. It shows that there are epigenetic changes in women that are consuming tea. Shockingly, though, not in men. So it's interesting because these epigenetic changes were found in genes involving cancer and estrogen metabolism. You might be saying, is this good or bad? And unfortunately, we don't yet know. All we can tell is that those epigenetic changes, which is basically when a methyl group attaches to the end of the genes, changes that gene functions, and then the woman can then pass that on to her kids. So in a way, epigenetics is almost modern-day Lamarckianism. We are changing our own genome and passing that on to our children. In this case, it looks like tea drinking can do this in women. Now, previous studies have shown tea consumption reduces estrogen levels, which highlights a potential difference between the biological responses in the tea from men and women, which might be why we're seeing that in women more and not men. Very, very interesting stuff. We're going to need more research to determine whether this is a good change or a bad change. But right now, we are seeing a change, and that is a super, super interesting fact.
The only culture I know that drinks a lot of tea is the British culture.
Right.
The only thing I know different from British women from every other woman is just they have trouble holding their monocles in when something crude is said.
That's true. So maybe it's an estrogen issue where they can't close their eyes all the way because of estrogen.
Yeah. Drinking tea makes British women unable to handle dick jokes in public.
Very, very interesting. Article number three. Scientists have physically rewired the brain of one species to produce the behaviors of another. Both of you guys thought this one was science, and this one is science. They examined the brains of the sea creatures that produce this type of swimming behavior. Now, they looked at two closely related species, the giant nudibranch and the hooded nudibranch. Now, what's really interesting about these two closely related species is they have the same neurons. And they have the same behaviors, but their neurons function differently to produce the same behaviors. So imagine you have two identical computers. Both of those computers do the same function, but they both do it by doing different processing methods. What these scientists are doing is changing one of those computers to the other's processing methods, which is a really interesting thing. First of all, it's interesting just to know that these closely related animals that have the same physiology do the same things in different ways. That's a really interesting evolutionary side branch. That's really, really neat. But what these guys wanted to do is look at, can we change one to the other? And when Connor asked, how did they do that? What did they do? Are they switching neurons around? Now, they didn't move neurons, but they were able to paralyze neurological function in those neurons using basically tree frog poison. And by doing that, they were able to kind of morph the structure, the neural structure of one to mimic the other and get the same results. So what they were able to say is, we took this computer that was, you know, doing something, took this other computer that was doing the same thing in a different way, and we changed the first computer to, again, do the same thing, but in the way the second computer was doing it. That sounds a little complicated and like, oh, what's the big deal? That's a really big deal. It means you can change the neural framework of the way animals function.
So if I just added frog poison to my Clockwork Orange scenario, would
yes,
it work?
Yes, absolutely.
You're fucking ridiculous.
And article number four, scientists have turned off allergic reactions in animals using gene editing techniques. Damien thinks this is false. Connor thinks this is true. And this one is science, meaning Connor's our winner. Congratulations, brother, for smashing Damien once again.
It was fucking tie.
It was weird because he won last week for the first time in like 3 years. He won. And I was like, oh man, the world is turning upside down. What's going to happen? And all of a sudden, Connor comes back, sets Damien back in his place as the loser of all losers. Just... boot on the throat.
I am the Rudy of this podcast. I've said it before. If Rudy got a sack 33% of the time you put him in,
right.
which is an incredible stat, by the way.
All right. This is, of course, A team was able to turn off the immune response in animals, which causes an allergic reaction. Basically, when you think of an allergic reaction, it's your immune system going out of control. And what they were able to do is go in and tell these immune cells to stop reacting to certain proteins. That's huge, because that's not just immune responses. That's allergies. That's rheumatoid arthritis. That's Crohn's disease. That's certain forms of brain diseases. That's huge. We have huge autoimmune disorders and issues with human populations. If we could find a way to tweak the immune system, that would be major. And right now, our only way to do that
methamphetamines.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And huge immunosuppressants that cause a whole other group of problems, and they're not 100% effective, and you have to constantly take them. This would be essentially a switch you turn on and off with a single injection, meaning that you have allergies, you have a horrible autoimmune disease that's crippling, maybe even killing you. You come in, you get one shot, you walk away, and you're done. That would be amazing. Now, we're not there yet. We don't know if that will realistically be in the near future, but this opens the door for that type of technology. So all you people who are suffering from horrible autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, this hope might be on the horizon for you, and we're showing that it's actually functioning, not in a theoretical way, which we've always thought, hey, maybe we could do this. It's actually shown to be proven in animal models to work.
So before I say this, I'll acknowledge this could very well be bad science, but I have heard of this one unfortunate guy who had very severe autoimmune disease, horrible allergies, could not get it fixed with anything.
Tapeworm?
He traveled to countries with poor sanitation,
yeah.
Walked around barefoot by the outhouses, let parasites crawl through the bottom of his feet for the purpose of having them suppress his immune system.
Yep.
So that they wouldn't
attack himself. They have shown some promising results with that. The problem is what you're essentially doing is introducing an agent which is occupying your immune system.
Right.
So what you're doing is saying, hey, you pretend your T cells are thugs in the neighborhood trying to break your shop open as in a protection racket. What you're essentially saying is, all right, we're going to start a fire over there so all the thugs, you know, get distracted and go over there. That's great in terms of your windows not getting broken, but eventually your house is going to burn down because what happens is, yeah, they're occupied doing that, but then what happens when you have a problem with your immune system and those parasites then get out of control, and then the immune system has a problem fighting those parasites and your body at the same time. So you're right. Those have been shown for short-term treatments. We've actually covered a few of those treatments on Science Faction. Sometimes they're the only option for people who are really suffering, and so in that case, go for it, you know, whatever you got. But that's not really a long-term solution, and this might end up being that long-term solution for those people with autoimmune issues.
Immune system, what happened? The cold, the flu is wrecking the body. Hey, don't blame us. We were beating the shit out of that hookworm over there. Hey, forget about it.
Super, super neat stuff. These are really, really interesting discoveries that might well change the way we do medicine in the next 20 years.
And now is the portion of the show where I get to summon a dead scientist.
Damien, see, asked a bunch of dumb questions, and then B, just got your ass handed to you in I Call BS, and because of that, we are going to skip your Damien Channels of Dead Scientist.
I am 3/5 a person on this podcast.
Yes, and that seems like too much to me. I think you are overrepresented, sir.
Weight and body mass index-wise, I'm 7/4 a person.
All right, guys, thank you, Connor, for joining us for Science Faction 177. Thank you, audience, for coming back, where you learned about the Ordovician period, a possible solution to the Fermi paradox, a surprising result about the genetics of ancient Egyptians, how scientists have discovered a very tall tree where they weren't expecting it, how drinking tea can change your genes, how scientists might be able to physically rewire your brain in the future, and how we might be able to turn off allergic reactions with a single shot. Thank you so much for joining us, and please come on back next week for Science Faction 178.
The thing we forget about the Fermi paradox is that if you are immortal, moving out of your mama's house at 35 ain't so bad.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.